This episode of The Lou Rockwell Show is sponsored by...
Do you want liberty in your lifetime? The Free State Project is our best chance. We are people who know that liberty will not be achieved by more of the same tactics and are committed to a strategy that will work. Check us out on the web at freestateproject.org. That's freestateproject.org.
This is The Lou Rockwell Show.
Well, it's great to have as our guest this morning, Jack Spirko. Jack is... I guess the expert in modern survivalism, and is famous for his daily podcast that he does virtually all the time while driving his car. So, Jack, I don't know exactly how you do that, but everybody tune into the survivalpodcast.com. Again, that's the survivalpodcast.com. So, Jack, here we are in obviously a very bad economic situation, very likely to get worse. What ought the average middle class family ought to be doing?
I mean, the economy is one aspect that people are dealing with right now, and of course it's a huge one. But the approach of what we call modern survivalism is really about solidifying your lifestyle no matter what the actual impact against it is. And it could be something like, you know, we're seeing the economy just absolutely implode right now, and it seems to be kind of leveling off. And you know, one expert tells you, well, we're going to go into recovery by the middle of next year. The other expert tells you we're going to be down, you know, even worse than ever before entering the Greater Depression. And you really don't know who to listen to. But one thing you do have to realize is that no one's coming to fix it for you. You have to fix it for yourself. So the first thing that the average person really needs to do is just like, I mean, even though we're talking about the economy and kind of a modern approach, just like, you know, wilderness survival, they teach you, if you're lost in the woods, the very first thing you do is stop, assess your situation and think, and then make a decision. Don't make a knee-jerk reaction. So in the economic turmoil, the first thing people need to do is exactly that. Stop, assess what you have. You know, what you've lost, and you have to just accept that you've lost it. But whatever you still have, you can solidify, you can protect. There are opportunities, like, you know, that are coming. I'm not an investment advisor, Lou, so I don't get into, like, you know, buy this stock or what have you. But whenever a market's depressed, there's always some opportunity here and there. So that can be assessed. But the big things that people need to be doing is setting up their lifestyle so that it doesn't really matter as much what goes on around them, that they'll be able to continue to live their life as best as possible. And those are from the very pragmatic things like making sure that you're not overspending, you're not in debt. I know that it's way too late for some people in that regard because they've already done it. But again, that's water under the bridge. So you look at that going forward. And then we teach, you know, the things that survivalists are known for, things like storing food, being able to defend your home, all of those things. But it's really about making sure that you're setting up sustainability in your life.
Well, Jack, give us some specifics on food. I mean, how does somebody go about this? Maybe they're thinking about this for the first time. They realize that at least there's the potential of, if Gerald Celente is right, of civil unrest, mm-hmm. of even food riots, if there's huge inflation combined with price controls. So in order to prepare for that sort of a situation, or as you say, just to prepare yourself for any situation, what do you do?
Well, I mean, the main mantra is eat what you store and store what you eat. So start with the things that are already in your home that have good shelf lives. I mean, so if we do end up in, like, you know, condition critical where we have, you know, electrical grids down and stuff like that, you don't lose all your food, because if you have a chest freezer full of meat, that's not really any use to you if you lose power, unless you have some kind of backup or redundant power. And that may be beyond the reach of a lot of people, especially people that are just starting out. So, you know, when you go to the grocery store, just about everything that's in the center, so you don't necessarily have to run off to, like, the Army-Navy store and buy a crate of MREs, but everything that's in the center there is stuff that has a good long-term storage life to it. And if you assess the things that you eat and use anyway and then get creative and figure out how to use some of the other stuff that's available and put that into your normal diet, then storage gets real easy, because all you start to do is the next time that you're in the grocery store, instead of buying, you know, one of an item, you buy three of it. And what you want to do is kind of give yourself goals, just like anything else you would do in life. So first, you stop, assess what you have. And most people probably have a week or two of food in their home. There's very few people that go to the store every day. So that would give you your initial timeline of a couple weeks, not enough. So then you set a goal to get to a month. Once you get to a month, you replicate that, you get to 2 months. And for many people, they'll kind of, like, level off there. I'm not quite comfortable at that number myself. I think that we need to prepare for, you know, a little bit more duration than that. But if most people were at kind of a 60-day level of sustainability with common foods that are available, that they buy and use every day. And the next time you needed something that wasn't in the pantry, you went upstairs or downstairs, grabbed it and replaced it and ran that rotational. A lot of these catastrophes, if they happened, their entire effect would be mitigated because there'd be less people panicking and running out in the streets. And I think that's the biggest thing to understand, that a lot of things that we do isn't just so much so that we'll be okay, but also to mitigate the consequence for the entire community.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Is the growth of government driving you crazy? Is it frustrating you that you can't do anything about it? Now you can. Join the Free State Project. Move to New Hampshire and get active with other liberty activists who have already slowed the growth of government in New Hampshire. Go to freestateproject.org.
Jack, what about home health care? What would you advise for a first aid kit or more than a first aid kit?
You got to go with more than just your basic first aid kit. If you go off to like Rite Aid or somewhere like that, or like a department store, and you buy one of their first aid kits, you're ending up with basically a big bunch of Band-Aids, you know, and some bandages and maybe a little bit of antiseptic. So you do need to be able to take care of more than just being able to put a Band-Aid on a cut. The thing is, unless you're a doctor, there's still only so much you can do. But one of the big critical issues is making sure that anybody that's on any kind of maintenance medication in your household, you have a good supply of that maintenance medication. And if it's possible, some stuff can't be stored, but anything that can be stored and has a good shelf life, you want to do that for 6 months. There's just no reason not to do it. I mean, think about a person that has a blood pressure medication that they have to take that sustains their life. And if we get a supply cut off and they don't have that available to them, that's a huge thing. Another thing is looking at having things like antibiotics. And there's limits to what a civilian without, you know, a prescription from a doctor can get their hands on. But having some way to deal with that situation is a really good idea if you can figure out how to do it. I talked to a lot of people that were, like, say, doctors in the Peace Corps at times. And they said in a lot of remote areas that the number one thing that they did to deal with the situation was either, you know, painkillers, improving hygiene, and giving oral antibiotics. So even a doctor in certain situations is really limited in what they can do. So you're going to be limited as well. But, you know, that's kind of the way I see to address that.
Do people need water purification equipment?
Water purification and water storage are two big things. Water, I worry about a lot, but not as much as I would worry about food. Generally speaking, unless we go into complete civil decay, which, you know, that's on the impact scale, that's huge, but on the probability, it's a lot lower than localized or regional disasters. There's usually some way to procure water or to purify water through it, be it through boiling or chemically. But storage of water is something a lot of people kind of overthink. They think, like, can I put water, just throw it in the closet or what have you, and will it has no shelf life. It can basically last forever unless it's in a container that's going to break down. So water, store as much as you can. The typical advice is 7 gallons per person per day. But if you think about that from a volume standpoint, it's not really practical for a family of four to try to store 6 months worth of water unless they have, you know, a cistern or something like that. But it's something you got to address, but there's a limit to how much you can do, and it's not something to overthink. So, if it's nothing other than going out and picking up 50 gallons of water from Walmart for 68 cents a jug, at least you've got some water there. And then also assess what are your other options for water that people overlook. If you have a swimming pool, not the greatest drinking water in the world, but if you were in a situation where the water system shut down, you can flush toilets with it, you can bathe with it, you can purify it, you can still cook with it. So that's one of those things that it's really more based on what are your resources and your capabilities, but just make sure you store as much of it as you can, because it's very inexpensive right now and it could be life critical in a different situation.
You mentioned defending your home. What do you recommend in terms of a gun? How much ammo do you recommend?
Well, how much, that's an individual choice. More than a box, I'll tell you that. I do recommend that every American avail themselves of the Second Amendment of the Constitution and own a gun. I think that's probably the number one way we can preserve it. And what I mean by that is, if you take a person that's kind of sort of anti-gun, but not anti-gun, but they've never been around guns, they don't own guns, and you teach them to shoot, and then they go out and purchase a weapon, and they own it, the Second Amendment takes on a new meaning for them. So to me, that's just a liberty issue there. But on the other side of that, kind of, I always have to say this, if you've never owned a weapon and you don't have kind of a good mentor in your life, and you go out and pay for training and you get trained on safety and use of a weapon before you buy one, because it's one thing I don't want the government getting involved any more than they already have, obviously. But definitely I do recommend firearms for self-protection. It is probably the greatest equalizer ever created in human history. And you need to be able to defend your home, be it a time of civil unrest, or because somebody that wants to take what you have simply breaks into your house. Kind of my assortment that I would recommend for like a long-term plan, and this is something you have to just run out and buy immediately, but I'm a big believer in a handgun for home defense. It's probably the most flexible weapon for use inside the home because it's small, it's compact. Again, you need to be trained, though, on how to use it. Shotgun and a rifle, and that's kind of a basic assortment, and highly recommend a .22 for training, target shooting, and teaching new shooters as well.
You know, Jack, as we listen to you, you're obviously a comrade in the battle for freedom. Do you think is there a connection between survivalism and freedom? Is this indeed why maybe the government doesn't like it?
I think there's a huge thing behind that, Lou, and what I've always said is that if you take people that maybe are not very politically motivated, or they're not open, or and some people are like very polarized right or polarized left, and you introduce them to the survival lifestyle, and they start to live it, and they start to make it part of what they do, you actually create libertarians with survivalism. And the reason I feel that happens is, if you think about how the government actually controls the population to a large degree, it's all about a couple things. And one is the polarization and splitting people into these right and left camps. And as soon as you've done that, a person doesn't want to listen to anything of reason from the other viewpoint because they're so married to whatever ideal they feel that they're defending. But the other side, and probably actually the bigger side, where you see the big encroachments come from government, are every time there's a crisis, every time there's a catastrophe, and more often wherever there's almost a catastrophe or a possible catastrophe, and people freak out and go, oh my God, we need to have something done. We need to be protected. We need to be kept safe. So they'll allow the government to do things that they normally would not. But if you take a person and you help them build a solid lifestyle that's immune to a lot of these threats, or even where it's not immune, they're able to stand tall through them and come out the other side in better shape than they went in, they're not real quick to make that deal with the devil and give up that liberty, because it was the liberty that allowed them to set up that lifestyle in the first place. So that's kind of my big reason for promoting survivalism, is because in the end, it creates people that value liberty.
Jack Spierko, sure appreciate you coming on the show today. And as everybody can tell, his podcast is well worth listening to. Take a look at the survivalpodcast.com. And Jack records this in his car, so it's... But today he's talking to us from his home, and Jack, we appreciate your doing so.
I'm glad to be here, Lou.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.